The Stonick Farm in Antrim County has about 200 milking cows, and those cows are healthy. And sometimes noisy as they produce milk that goes to market.
That's the milk truck coming in now.
The Stonicks have run this farm for decades and have taken care of their animals for decades. Part of that has meant keeping the cows healthy from the normal illnesses that all animals can get. But now they're on guard for something that you would not necessarily expect in cows, the bird flu. So far, so good for the Stonicks, not so for some other dairy farms in Michigan. It's one of the things we're talking about this week on the Up North Lowdown from Interlaken Public Radio. I'm Ed Ronco. That story, plus we'll hear how a once promising housing development in Boyne City is now off the table, and a mystery on the beach in Frankfurt. But first, little tiny pieces of plastic. Students at Northwestern Michigan College are conducting research into the presence of microplastics. New findings show they are in unexpected places across Northwest Michigan. Here's IPR environment reporter Ellie Katz.
It's summer vacation, but biology professor Nick Roster is in the lab.
So what I'm doing right now is taking samples.
And preparing them for a digestion process.
That gets rid of all the organics, and then what's left are either going to be minerals or plastic.
Roster and his students began taking samples from the Boardman River last fall, but have now expanded the project to include well water. They've sampled wells from homes in Grawn, Old Mission Peninsula, Traverse City, and Mancelona.
What we're finding is we're finding plastic in all of these wells. And that's another question that's going to perhaps spawn other research on how is plastic getting from where we are 200 feet down into the aquifer. We have no idea.
There is plastic piping for water, he says.
But what we're finding is fibers, and plastic pipes don't shed fibers. They shed pieces of plastic, but not fibers. That fibers are coming from clothes.
In fact, most of what he and his students find are plastic fibers, which appear in a lot of the things we wear these days. They shed in the washing machine and enter waterways. Roster and his students have even found fibers in earthworms. He says some researchers are studying how plastic permeates soil, but the answer is still unclear. Microplastic also accumulates in our bodies, and early research has linked it to infertility, colon cancer, and heart disease. Despite that, the pollutant still remains largely unregulated at both the state and federal levels. Roster says students will begin taking air samples this summer, plus water samples at Traverse City's water treatment plant, which treats drinking water for residents and businesses.
Ellie Katz with that story. Michigan is requiring more biosecurity measures on farms. That's because of an outbreak of bird flu in dairy herds. The illness first showed up in cattle in Texas earlier this year, but Michigan has reported the most cases in dairy herds in the country. Scientists say controlling this disease is important because this latest jump to cattle could threaten the health of animals and humans. IPR climate reporter Izzy Ross takes us to the farm.
We're out here at 5 o'clock every morning to get started feeding babies.
Lori Stonick has worked at her family's dairy farm in Antrim County for almost 50 years. Right now, they have about 200 milking cows.
That guy over there was yesterday's new one. They're born about 100 pounds, 120 pounds.
That little guy over there?
The one that just stood up, the first one. Yeah.
This is among the Michigan dairy farms that have to abide by new state measures to protect against the bird flu, officially called H5N1. The state has said the flu is a threat to animal health, human health, trade, and the economy. And its jump to cattle has officials worried. Tim Boring is the director of the State Department of Agriculture and Rural Development.
We want to make sure that we're limiting the further spread of the virus so that we're continuing to protect human health and we don't have so much virus in the environment that could potentially mutate and affect humans in a different way.
In other words, right now the risk to humans is low and they want to keep it that way. Farmers therefore face new biosecurity requirements, things like limiting the number of people and animals coming in. The Stonicks have what's called a closed herd.
We raise our own so they don't come up against other herds that have been in other states or other places. So they've all been raised here.
To To lower the risk of infection, the state says farms should also name a biosecurity manager. The Stonics appointed one of their adult sons.
Well, he's the one that designated the security or the perimeter, and he's the one that's supposed to keep the log of who comes and who goes and their purpose for being here and how long they were here. Has to all be documented.
So how did the virus jump from birds to cows? Right now, scientists aren't sure.
You know, I'm a virologist by training, and my other virologist buddies and I all have to admit none of us saw this coming.
Kim Dodd is the director of the Veterinary Diagnostic Lab at Michigan State University.
We didn't expect to find high path avian influenza in dairy cattle, and to find that it amplifies so well, and that we have so much virus in the milk. And so that's really a big part of trying to understand, you know, what do we do about that to be able to help control the outbreak?
When poultry contract the bird flu, they're euthanized. That stops the viral spread.
On the cattle side, these guys recover after a period of 7 to 10 days of mild to moderate illness. So those animals are still there and still producing virus while they recover, which gives individuals who are caring for them the opportunity to come into contact with that virus and potentially spread it themselves.
Looming in the background is climate change. Its role in this outbreak of H5N1 is unclear. But generally, research has shown that climate change could make the transmission of viruses between species more likely.
Absolutely. As we see climate change, we see changes in migratory patterns and the timing of migratory patterns. And, you know, to what degree climate change may have played a role in how long this outbreak has gone on, I think remains to be seen.
As the climate warms, animals are pushed into new places at different times of year. That can create more opportunities for certain pathogens to infect new hosts. For example, the spread of tick populations has brought certain diseases to new places. So state agriculture officials say more safety measures on farms could become a bigger part of their approach to climate change. Dodd says Michigan's response so far has been relatively strong, and the fact that the state has seen so many positive cases is because it's testing for them.
That takes two sides. It takes the people who are looking and the people who are testing, but it also requires that the people who own the animals are opening their doors and allowing testing to occur.
These are the girls that give milk. These are the lactating herd. And they've all just been milked.
No dairy herds in northern Michigan have reported signs of bird flu yet. But back in Antrim County, Lori Stonick says dealing with animal sickness is just part of running a farm. So Stonick says they're paying attention to the new rules and doing what they've always done.
A lot of it's just good herdsmanship, just common sense. You keep your animals healthy so they, in turn, give you a healthy product. It's what your livelihood is on.
For now, though, it's back to feeding and milking. The dairy truck comes to pick up milk every other day, and the cows are hard at work.
Izzy Ross, reporting in Antrim County. Her work comes to us through a partnership with Grist. Read much more about this on our website, iprnews.org. Now stick around, we are going to take the briefest of breaks, and then we will hear about an unusual scene on the beach in Frankfurt.
It's a nature murder mystery.
We'll be right back.
I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go. There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. But on Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's a new podcast from NPR where I invite actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to talk about some of life's biggest questions. Listen to Wildcard wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR.
It's a dry spring, 1984 in Wisconsin. And all these suspicious fires are popping up. A conservation warden named Dave is pretty sure it's arson, but he can't catch a break. So he talks with a colleague, and they decide to get creative.
And whether it was his idea or mine, I guess I'm not sure initially, but we decided there was no other way of doing this.
Trying to catch an arsonist in the act. That's next time on Points North. That episode of Points North is available now. You can listen to it wherever you're hearing this podcast.
Welcome back to The Lowdown. IPR's Cheryl Bartz loves to go exploring in the outdoors, and she recently was strolling the beach in Frankfurt when she came upon a surprise.
As I walked down the sand toward Lake Michigan the other day, a bright green scrap caught my eye. Probably plastic, I thought. But after I saw several, I took a closer look. Not plastic. Bright green stink bugs, each less than 1 inch long. At the water's edge, a massive row of dead bugs, a couple of feet wide and several inches deep, stretched as far as I could see in either direction. And here's the mystery. How did they end up dead on Frankfurt Beach? They live on land, where they suck juices from plants and fruits. So they didn't go down to the beach looking for something to eat. They had floated in on the waves. I remembered there was some really bad weather on the other side of the lake a few days before. Had they blown in from Wisconsin? A few gulls flew around, but didn't land to eat. Stink bugs release a chemical with an offensive odor when they feel threatened. So maybe they taste bad, too. I shared some photos with a local extension agent. He'd never seen such a thing either. Were these the green stink bugs native to Michigan? Or were they the southern green stink bug, which is believed to have originated in Ethiopia? I collected a sample so the extension agent could figure that out. They can be a big crop pest, so it's important to fruit growers to know what they might be dealing with. Tune in again next week when we hope to have a firm ID of the victims and a better idea of how they came to rest on Frankfurt Beach. And you're really going to have to go to the IPR website and take a look at the pictures of this enormous pile of green bugs. That's iprnews.org.
Cheryl Bartz in Frankfurt. A few months ago, we told you about a housing project planned for Boyne City. The nonprofit developer Michigan Community Capital proposed apartments and a new community room for the local library. At the time, it seemed like the city commissioners would need a little more convincing. Here's developer Marilyn Krumka talking to IPR back in January.
You know, if they decide that they would rather have parking there instead of all these benefits, that's really their decision. And I can move on to a community that would support a project and welcome a project.
Well, she might have to do exactly that. City commissioners unanimously voted the project down. IPR's Michael Livingston has this update.
The ground floor would have been a new community room for the Boyne District Library. It's right next door to the site. But above it, 24 new apartment units. The building was first proposed by Michigan Community Capital back in 2022. MCC is a nonprofit that creates workforce housing by partnering with municipalities. It pays for construction through state and federal grant money. The project, which would have been on Park and Ray Streets, would have replaced over 40 parking spots. At the nearly five-hour-long city council meeting last week, many residents said those spots are too important to lose, especially in busy summer tourism months.
During peak seasons, finding a parking spot is already challenging. Removing a crucial parking lot will exacerbate this issue and lead to decreased foot traffic for businesses that depend on it.
That was Boyne City resident Jennifer Hughes. She and others who opposed the project said they understood the need for housing, but they recommend the city look outside the downtown area for development. Hughes collected signatures from residents who were opposed, along with another resident named Jenna Roland. Roland raised issues with the design and placement of the building, taking away from the, quote, small downtown feel.
The urbanization of Boyne City, characterized by the construction of massive four-story buildings, threatens to undermine the small-town charm and unique character that residents and visitors have long cherished.
City commissioners agreed, but they had more concerns with financing and planning.
It absolutely was not a good spot or fit for town. And, quite frankly, it shouldn't have made it as long as it did.
That was Commissioner Marty Moody. He questioned the use of tax increment financing money for the project. That's when the city issues bonds to pay for a project, then they raise property taxes for a set period of time and use that money to pay off the bonds. MCC asked for 30 years of tax increment financing. Moody said that was too long. Commissioners also worried the apartments would cost too much. According to the developer, more than half of the apartments were proposed to be affordable for those who make between $35,000 and $60,000 per year. But Commissioner Sandy Pritchard says some business owners told her the apartment still wouldn't have been affordable to many workers in the area.
The overwhelming feeling, at least of the people and the petitions that came to us, was this is not the best choice.
Meanwhile, supporters of the project underline the pressing need for affordable housing for workers at all price points. According to data from the nonprofit Housing North, Charlevoix County needs nearly 730 more rental units to keep up with demand and population growth. Monica Peck runs Boyne District Library, which would have gotten a new community room through the development.
There's just so many roadblocks to being able to do any of these sort of projects.
She and her staff had been rooting for the MCC proposal and were disappointed with the City Commission's decision.
It was just disheartening that there wasn't room for a dialogue between, you know, all the parties involved in the community to try to come up with a solution that everybody could live with.
So what about the developer? Marilyn Krumka is MCC's Vice President of Development. She said she won't be pursuing this project anymore, but MCC does have its eyes on another site in Boyne City. It's on an empty lot on Lake Street, just across the street from the shores of Lake Charlevoix. It could become 60 apartments if approved.
I think the need and the want is there, and I encourage the commission to continue to educate themselves on the barriers that exist for housing.
City officials say there will be additional housing discussions at future meetings.
That story from IPR's Michael Livingston. All right, let's find out what else made news this week in Michigan. Republicans pushed back against a plan by Michigan Attorney General Dana Nessel to deputize private practice attorneys to pursue climate lawsuits. Nessel says her approach is novel but perfectly legal and will hold oil and gas companies accountable for fossil fuels' harm to the environment. Republicans say it is a political agenda that is unmoored from legal principles. Officials with the Michigan Department of Natural Resources euthanized more than 31,000 Atlantic salmon at a hatchery in Wexford County. The fish tested positive for a bacterial kidney disease known as BKD. Officials with the DNR said the number of fish that were euthanized is significant, but not enough to impact Atlantic salmon populations for local anglers. A company that grows mushrooms is getting a National Science Foundation grant to see if fungi can destroy PFAS pollution. The Marquette-based company Myconaut is exploring which fungi can break down the many forms of the toxic forever chemicals. Congresswoman Alyssa Slotkin says she's open to new mines in the Upper Peninsula. She told reporters in Traverse City recently that she does not want to damage the Great Lakes, but if mining can meet Michigan's strict standards, then she is open to the idea. Slotkin, a Democrat, is running for Debbie Stabenow's open U.S. Senate seat this year. That's the Up North Lowdown this week. We had contributions from Ellie Katz, Izzy Ross, Cheryl Bartz, and Michael Livingston. Our music is by Blue Dot Sessions. Our producer is Max Copeland. I'm Ed Ronco. One more thing before we go. Interlochen Public Radio was honored this week three times over by the Public Media Journalists Association, or PMJA. Our Points North podcast won first place in the sports feature category for an episode about the stone skipping competition on Mackinac Island. And it won second place for an episode about a harrowing ice rescue on Saginaw Bay. Both stories were by Dan Wanchura. And in the category of arts feature, IPR's Michael Livingston brought home a first place win for a piece about a piano that was mysteriously placed in a pedestrian tunnel in Petoskey.
People walk through this concrete tunnel all the time, probably because it's free to park by the beach. But recently, there's been music coming from inside. Sometimes it's loud enough to hear from multiple streets away.
Looking back on the memory of the dance we shared.
That's Trevor Magakian playing an upright piano right at the center of the tunnel.
All the world was rough. Could I have known that you'd ever say goodbye?
And nobody knows how this piano got here. It's a pretty old Grinnell Brothers piano, likely made in Detroit. It's got a bright, smooth finish and one brass foot pedal. Maybe it's just Trevor's playing, but something about the acoustics in this tunnel makes the old thing sound amazing.
Congrats to all who worked on these stories. And thank you so much for listening. Have a great week.